we've just caught up with Donald Runicles. That was a wonderful Beethoven 8th symphony.
It's something of the stepchild, the step symphony. We all know and love the 7th and, of course, the monumental 9th. And the 8th, I think, gets a little short shrift. It is, though, an astonishing work. And whether a program opens with it or ends with it, it's a Beethoven at its most vital, at his sunniest in some ways. And yet it's akin to the pastoral in its sunniness at the beginning, and yet you have this force of nature, this finale, which is far more akin to the 9th. It's an astonishing work.
Well, it's great to have you back. You're back for 2 weeks now.
Yes, the work with this remarkable orchestra is one of the highlights of my life, highlights of my conducting year. And the chance to actually work with the Philadelphia Orchestra over 2 weeks is rare. I like to think it just deepens a relationship that is already a wonderful one.
And this program is Beethoven and Elgar. And I think I read that your first performance with the Philadelphia Orchestra was also Beethoven and Elgar.
Oh my God.
How do Beethoven, Elgar, and Brahms work together in a program like this?
I think that's what you have to ask the audience. I hope the audience feels that there's this arc. Obviously, bookending a program with Beethoven and Brahms, they are most certainly cousins. Moving through the classical to the, in some ways, I mean, Brahms is regarded as quite classical, particularly in the Haydn variations where he's taking this delightful theme, and what he does with it is astonishing, but it is this somewhat old-fashioned approach of variations on a theme. And yet he brings so much more color to the orchestra, and the Elgar, it's close to my heart, obviously, because I come from that part of the world, but it's Elgar, the composer, very much also steeped in this late 19th century, this romantic orchestra. One of his most personal works, the cello concerto, almost autobiographical. I mean, there are many theories about, is this an elegy? Is this about loss, about grief, about what happened in 1914 to 1918, or is this something more personal, a man himself, Elgar, who knew some very, very black periods in his life, a manic depressive? It's a hauntingly beautiful work, and I'd like to think that for the audience, it really does take you on a journey from the sunny beginning of a Beethoven 8th through this deeply emotional work, the Elgar, and then the Brahms, once again, the sun emerges.
It's so interesting because the Beethoven, as you say, it's much lighter and sunnier, yet he was at a difficult time when he was writing that. He had a love affair, perhaps, that didn't go well. So if he was writing from a difficult place and produced this sunny work, and then you have Elgar writing at a difficult time in his life, and the tone of his work is very different, is there anything to make of that?
I think it's an interesting question in as far as what happened in the 19th century as we moved from this classical music where composers were, of course, their music is full of emotion. It is full of tension. It is full of everything that makes life worth living. It is all about the darkness and the light and the journey we all find ourselves on. Very often, though, the mood of a work belies the composer's personal situation. I mean, next week we'll be performing Mozart, the 29th symphony. And some of his most jubilant, joyous works were written at a time in his life where you think, why on earth would he write something sunny when he was going through such misery in his own life? And then you progress through the 19th century where I think, and we call it romantic music, where I think music then took on more of a personal and autobiographical feel to it. You think of the music to a certain degree, certainly Elgar, certainly Gustav Mahler. And Brahms is something of the anomaly because he was a man, as we know, there was great sadness in his life. His long platonic love affair relationship with Clara Schumann. There is the wistfulness, there is the sadness, there is the joy, but it isn't quite as, it can be read as just a beautiful emotion as opposed to this is Johannes Brahms feeling quite wistful or feeling quite joyous or really feeling angry. And certainly when you get to Edward Elgar, there's something so deeply personal. I don't think one can understand the cello concerto fully unless one takes the trouble to read about when this work was written, the time in Edward Elgar's life, a man who was plagued by self-doubt, who always considered himself an amateur, who never thought. I mean, the inferiority complex with Edward Elgar was quite astonishing. And he then gives you these works of great beauty when you do have this sense of, there's a sense of loss. And I'd like to think that's what, as an audience moves through this program together, that ultimately each and every one of us should be able to relate to music. And we should be able to take any music and relate it to our own lives and the questions that we all have. And I'd like to think that even in a more classical program such as today, there is something there for everyone.
I'd love to explore with you a little bit your experience and your growing up. You grew up in Edinburgh and you sang in a choir and played horn and piano and worked at Usher Hall selling programs when you were young. You were an usher at Usher.
Doing your homework.
And then you went to London and then went to Germany. How do all of those different influences affect how you approach an orchestral program?
Since I was a boy, I've always had this fascination with the human voice. I used to sing myself as a choir boy. I have a pretty ugly voice now, I have to say, and I'm always a little worried at singing something to the orchestra and asking them to emulate it. But the voice has always been an integral part of my life as a choir boy, then singing for my father in church. And it all then began with opera. My move from London to Germany back then was all about becoming a member of an opera house and being a pianist there and coaching the singers and preparing singers, getting a chance perhaps myself to deputize for the conductor and then eventually perhaps conducting myself. When you ask then, how does this all inform my orchestral music making? I would say that the human voice is the beginning of it all. I mean, I think it's, if I say it's the lowest common denominator, that is in no way derogatory. I think everything we do in making music, we relate in some level or on some level to how would you sing a phrase? I mean, so much of today's program, whether it's in the Elgar or in the Brahms, it sounds a little bit of a cliche, but there are so many moments which sound like songs without words. In the Elgar too, in the next week's program as well. In other words, my work with my immersion in all things vocal, I think informs my music making in as far as the way I phrase. Where would I breathe in a phrase, even if it's an instrumental? Where would a violinist breathe if that violinist was singing that phrase? And that, I think, is where this all comes together. I think there's very often this somewhat artificial divide, certainly in the United States, between orchestral conductors and opera conductors. Sometimes it's very hard to be able to do both. One rather gets stereotyped. But I believe there is absolutely no divide, because in a Mozart piano concerto or in an Elgar cello concerto, that cello, is there any instrument closer to the human voice? I think that one of the reasons this cello concerto, played so beautifully by Johannes Moser, it's as close as to a song or a voice as any instrument is. So that, I'd like to think that that's, I have a wonderful life, which is full of opera, which is full of, I do a lot of piano playing myself or as an accompanist. I work with voices all the time, whether it's in the opera house or here in this remarkable hall. I would say, yes, the human voice is that which informs everything I do.
Well, we really look forward to the second half. Thank you so much for talking to us.
You're most welcome.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.